Senate will come to order. We are that order of business, Senate confirmation of appointments. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into open executive session.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Will the reading clerk please read the consent list, which is the entire list of nominees.
Confirmation of appointments 2010, Aeronautics Commission, Raymond Lee, Doyle Vaughn. Board of Agriculture, James Hodder. Department of Agriculture, Jason Ferniel. Agricultural and Natural Resource Mediation Board, Frankie Addington, Elaine Carney, William Laycock. Wyoming Arts Council, Janelle Fletcher Kilmer, Neil Hansen, Isla Miller, David Neary. Board of Barber Examiners, Russ Humphrey. Wyoming Business Council Board of Directors, Richard Bratton, Chris Davidson, Doreen Schar, Patrick Schmidt, Norma Shelton, A. Richard Walgie. Children's Trust Fund Board, Gretchen Clark, Mark Nelson. Wyoming Community Development Authority, Wayne Deal, Dan Sullivan. Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund Board, David Reitz, Nancy Schiffer. University of Wyoming Energy Resources Council, Carl Bauer, James Kleckner. Enhanced and Improved Oil Recovery Commission, Betty Fear, N. Maha Hansenen, Peter Wold, Board of Equalization, Deborah Smith, Geological Survey Board, Lisa Lindemann, PG, Board of Geologists, Kevin Boyce, Lynette D. George, Ellen Verplog, Industrial Siting Council, Mike Daly, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, Bryce Freeman, Board of Insurance Agents Examiners, Richard Betcher, Jr. Commission on Judicial Conduct and Ethics, Kirsten Connolly, Karen Hayes. Mental Health Professions Licensing Board, Laura Schmidt-Pizzotto, Catherine Selby. State Mining Council, Mike Cumrine, Robert Pacheco. Occupation Health and Safety Commission, Lloyd Robinson, Dennis Shepard. Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, G. Bruce Williams. Board of Outfitters and Professional Guides, Scott Edberg, Wendell Froughton, James Schell, Michael Yardis. Paramutual Commission, Bill Dobbs, Joel Tully. Board of Pharmacy, Stephanie McAnty. Wyoming Pipeline Authority, Dave Kinini. Board of Psychology, Ken Bell, Ph.D., Matt Gray, Ph.D., Mark Watt, Ph.D., J.D., Real Estate Commission, Ray Elser. Wyoming School Facilities Commission, Madeline Algier, Matt Garland, Brian Moneth. Wyoming Tourism Board, Carrie Cooper, David Hanks, Renee Middleton. Water Development Commission, Mitchell Cotnier. Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board, Peggy Colson, Steve Meadows, and Elaine Roberts.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yes. Mr. President, I would think at this time if we would request for a name to be removed from the consent list, is that the appropriate time?
We have a motion. I think if you would move the
consent list. Okay, Mr. President, I move the adoption of the consent list, which consists of all appointments as read in. Thank you, Mr.
Does any member wish to remove any names from the consent list? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I request that the Nancy Schiffer Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund Board be removed from the consent list.
Does anyone else have any names they want to remove from the consent list? Chief Clerk, please call the roll on the consent list.
Bebelt. Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe. Cooper. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt. Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson. Martin. Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer-S.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 25 ayes, 5 excused.
By your vote, the appointments on the consent list has been approved. Senator Anderson?
I would just ask that we proceed with the roll call vote on that member that has been removed.
Any further discussion? The chief clerk, there being none, the chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
For Culture, Wyoming Culture Trust Fund Board, Nancy Schiffer. Please call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout, excused. Burns.
Aye.
Case. Co. Cooper, excused. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquivel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt, excused. Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson, excused. Martin, excused. Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer-S.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
4 years.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 24 ayes. 5 excused, 1 conflict.
By your vote, the appointment of Nancy Schiffer has been approved. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
Well, you've heard the motion. I think we're supposed to... Dissolve itself out of executive session.
Mr. President, I would then move that we resolve ourselves out of the executive session.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion approved. Okay, House bills and first reading. Excuse me. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Mr. President, it's not often that we get people down all the way from up by the Montana line, but we're so privileged this afternoon to welcome the Sheridan Leadership Group, the class of 2010. Sheridan's one of the largest, most successful programs in the state and oldest programs in the state. And I wish you would make them welcome. They're in the balcony behind me. Please stand up there.
Welcome to the Capitol and the Senate room.
Neither did I at their age.
House Bill 78, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 78, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Natural Gas Taxation, an act relating to taxation and revenue. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 36, noes 21, excused 3.
House Bill 78 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 39, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 39, sponsored by Representative Gilmore, Insurance Benefits, Usual, Customary, and Reasonable, and Act Relating to Insurance. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 43, noes 12, excused 3.
House Bill 39 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 120, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 120, sponsored by Representative Throne, Student Assessment Measures, an Act Relating to Education. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2.
House Bill 120 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 125, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 125, sponsored by Representative Brown, Subdivision, Separately Acquired Properties, and Act Relating to Subdivisions. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 2, excused 3.
House Bill 125 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 122, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 122, sponsored by Representative Wallace, Disposal of Livestock, an Act Relating to Livestock. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 122 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 114.
House Bill 114, sponsored by Representative Wallace, Partition Fences, an Act Relating to Partition Fences. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 1, excused 3.
House Bill 114 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 54.
House Bill 54, sponsored by Representative Wallace, Wyoming Food Freedom Act, an Act Relating to Agriculture. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 43, noes 14, excused 3.
House Bill 54 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 95, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 95, sponsored by Representative Yagi, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act 2, an act relating to the Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2.
House Bill 95 is assigned to Committee Number 6, Travel. House Bill 79, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 79, sponsored by Representative Brown, Eminent Domain Wind Power Collector Lines, and Act Relating to Condemnation. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 79 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 108, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 108, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Health Insurance Reform and Act Relating to Insurance. Passed the House on third reading. Ayes 51, noes 5, excused 3, conflict 1.
House Bill 108 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 128, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 128, sponsored by Representative Simpson, Health Insurance Interstate Purchase and Act Relating to Health Insurance. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 54, noes 2, excused 2, conflict 2.
House Bill 128 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 65, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Hines, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business, considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Perkins.
Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 66. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 66, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Governmental Claims Acts Process, and Act Relating to the Wyoming Governmental Claims Act. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 66, Governmental Claims Act Process. There were no standing committee amendments, and I will explain the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, the reason for this bill is that is to clarify for lawyers, in essence, and those individuals that may wish to file pro se claims, under the Governmental Claims Act, there are certain things that you have to do. And it's become a trap for the unwary. And as Supreme Court cases have come down, it's made it more and more difficult to have the right incantation in your claim to establish jurisdiction over the claim. And all this bill does is basically set forth in statute what is required by those series of cases with regard to the Governmental Claims Act. So in essence, what it requires is first of all, we spell out on page 2 where the claims are filed, and then what the claim must state in accordance with this statute and the Wyoming Constitution. The reason you have an engrossed bill is because in the House, they added on page 3, lines 13 through 23, a notarial statement as a form for use when you file your claim. So in essence, you must, if you file a claim against a governmental entity, you have to do it within the time frames as allowed by the statute, and we don't change any of that. then you must assert that claim in a specific form. And this sets out what that form is. One, that you filed your claim with that, that when you file your lawsuit, you have one, you have stated that you filed the claim under this Section C of this bill. It was filed, and that it was also filed in accordance with Article 16, Section 7 of the Wyoming Constitution, which requires an itemized statement. It requires it to be sworn under oath and notarized. And that's why you have that notarial situation here. So it doesn't change the case law, but it certainly spells out so that for a practitioner or somebody who wishes to file a pro se claim, this is what you have to do if you wish to file a claim against a governmental entity. It makes it clear. And that's the nature of the bill, and I would stand for questions.
Thanks, Senator Ross. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion, when the committee of the whole rises to report that it is so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 66, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 66 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 101. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 101, sponsored by Representative Rodney Anderson, Electricity Generated from Wind Taxation, and Act Relating to Taxation and Revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise to report it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 101, Electricity Generated from Wind Taxation. Okay, back me up. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through this bill and kind of outline what it is. This is a taxation bill. It levies $1 per on each megawatt hour or a portion thereof of wind-generated tax. I'll go through page by page. The bill takes effect January 1st, 2012. The exemptions over on page 3, any generation facility operated by the federal government, the state government, county or municipality is exempt. The standard exemption for electricity generated for personal consumption. On line 16 on page 3, the tax doesn't go into effect until 3 years after the turbine first produces electricity. That's to give a real incentive to these folks to come in and create this industry in the state. The standard boilerplate taxation language on 4, 5, 6, and 7, and then we start on page 8. With distribution. What this bill says is 60% should be distributed to the counties of this state. It's proportionate to the percentage of the generating facilities to the total wind generation valuation for the state. That's 60% of the tax, 40%, pretty standard, goes to the general fund. This act is effective on January 1st, 2011, which would be a year from now. Now, Mr. Chairman, the genesis of this taxation bill is, in fact, to look at how we're going to treat the wind industry in Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, particularly will recall there was a task force on wind generation, socioeconomic wildlife task force that dealt with all those issues. Amongst them is the taxation issue. And it can get fairly complicated with these things. What we're doing with this is we're buying some time. I have visited with my counterpart on the interim committee. We are going to ask Management Council to assign this as an interim study for Committee Number 3 Revenue to look at the aspects of taxing the wind energy industry. There are a number of things that number of issues that need to be addressed. For example, and this isn't all of them, but this is some of them. In terms of the valuation, there are certain wind farms where the assessed value is determined here in Cheyenne, if they're owned by a utility, for example. Other wind farms that are owned by what I'll term a wind merchant, a contract provider, is assessed at the county level. That doesn't make sense if we subscribe to the theory of fair and equal taxation. So we need to resolve that issue. We need to understand fully what we're doing in terms of the 60-40 split between the counties and the state's general fund. There are some real ramifications in that. The other area that I think, and again, I throw this out as an example. In some places, and I think it's worth looking at, other states have taxed the wind industry but spread the taxation out over the lifetime of the project, of the turbine, if you will. And there's a certain amount of sense to that, one, it cultivates an industry. Two, it means that the revenue stream is maintained over the life of the industrial development. There's some discussion, and I hope we'll resist that at this point, about contracts already in place. Those are private contracts, but maybe the task force needs to hear about that. The other one, particularly in this industry, is the role of liens in this industry. It's a peculiar sort of critter, and it appears there's peculiar liens involved. Third, another area is the impact on wildlife. It just happens that where the prime wind, what's classified as 7 wind, is the best wind there is. And we've got a lot of it by comparison. Also happens to be where sage grouse are, and somehow we've got to take care of that situation, whatever it's going to be. But anyway, those are the things, and there are others, that we feel we're going to ask the Management Council to let us look at. This bill is the placeholder. We believe, particularly with this bill in place, we've kind of got the groundwork to bring everybody to the table, and let's see if we can figure out the right way to do this. That's the bill in a nutshell. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the Chairman of Revenue for doing this. I was supposed to have been down here to do it, but we were in committee and it was moved up a little bit. I think he covered it very well. Want everybody to remember that we have another, we're not supposed to talk about other legislation, but I'm going to. We have another companion wind bill that will come to this floor within a day or so, which was a companion to Senate File 66 that went out. It is the other part of regulation. Make no mistake about it, this is the beginning of a taxation bill. It is. But I would point out it has a delayed implementation and impact. Gives everybody the knowledge going in that this is going to be there. It also has a lower rate than you've heard maybe referred to at some other times. And I'm not going to stand here and tell you that after we have a task force meeting and after revenue meets, it may be thought that should be changed, but it shouldn't be change now, because we don't have sufficient information, as was indicated by the chairman, to make that happen. So it has a later implementation rate. It has a lower date. There's a lot of things about it that we need to work out, and hopefully we will be able to do that over the interim. But this is a start. There's no doubt about it. And so know that. But I think we have to get started on treating wind as we do many of our other energy sources. So I urge your vote and your consideration, and look forward to giving you the other part of the wind regulation bill tomorrow or the next day.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question. As I read it, it's $1 per megawatt hour produced. Could somebody translate that into how much it is per kilowatt hour, which is what most of us are a little more used to dealing with? I'm not quite sure the conversion between megawatts and kilowatts.
Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, that's the question I was going to ask, sort of. I'd like to know where the $1 came from, and I want to know how that compares to other states out there, you know, what they're doing, if in fact they're doing anything.
Yes, Senator Elliott.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that I support for a number of reasons. I think wind power is here, and there are certainly some of my constituents that don't like the idea of the towers being across their land, but it's no doubt that it's coming. But I do have some questions, and by the way, I also support very wholeheartedly the idea of a continuing interim study, because it's a new topic that has to be very carefully looked at, in my judgment, and certainly in the judgment of the people in the counties that have this wind that the senator from KC was referring to. It's world-class quality. We owe it to the people that live in all of those areas of Wyoming to try and do this as correctly as possible from the get-go. I have a couple of questions on the bill as presented, and I don't know whether they can be answered or how they will be answered, but on page 2, on lines 20 to 22, they place the tax on each megawatt hour of electricity produced from the wind resources at the point of interconnection with an electric transmission line. That's the point, as I understand that section, where the imposition of the tax is to occur. Then you go over to the next page, page 3, and I'd ask you to look at the lines commencing with 16 and going down through the middle part of line 19, where they purport to say that the tax will not be imposed until, under this chapter, until the date 3 years after the turbine first produced electricity for sale. It seems to me inconsistent. Might be the hobgoblin of a little mind, but are we taxing at the point that it's distributed for sale, or are we taxing at the interconnection site with the electrical transmission line? It seems to me that needs to be worked out so that it is reasonably consistent. The other issue was hit on, and I hope the interim study will look at these questions as well. There are constitutional issues, I think, involved, because if I understand it correctly, and I'm certainly not an expert, when we tax minerals such as coal, we tax the coal, at least originally, at the mouth of the mine, not when it's later sold or where it's later sold or what the value was at the point of sale. I can see, and maybe it's just the old retired lawyer in me coming to rising to boil, but I can see equal protection questions, because we need to look in this interim study very carefully at what the senator from the North was saying. How does this compare in terms of tax rates to the historical rate that we have charged to the mineral severance energy? And what relationship does that bear to renewable energy? that is not going to be disposed of and put into a severance kind of category because it is renewable energy. These are important questions. We talk about the sage-grouse. I read today that at least one decision is being asked to be postponed for a week. That's a critical impact, not just on wind energy, but on our farmers, our ranchers, and certainly our hunters and outdoor recreationalists. This bill deserves consideration. It does deserve an interim study, and I'm going to vote to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Elliott. Senator Case.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Well, a megawatt is 1 million watts. So that's 1,000 kilowatts. So this tax works out to be like one-tenth of a cent per kilowatt hour. And I think of it this way. It was my understanding, and I don't know this rock solid, but I think the federal government has a 2 cents per kilowatt hour subsidy for wind. Maybe it's not that high, and maybe it doesn't apply to all projects. So this is pretty small in comparison to that, if you look at it that way. I have a question about the distribution of the tax proceeds, and I know that's a, you know, how much you go to local government, how much you go to the state. But I look at wind as being one of the developments in Wyoming that most significantly will affect our landscape, our vistas, our hunting opportunities, our wildlife habitat. More than any other development, the footprint of this is, you know, going to be very large. And there was some testimony offered in the committee that if we see 1,000 megawatts installed now, that we could see as much as 15,000 when this industry matures. So I was driving in to work this morning, and I looked out, and we have a wind farm over there, and we have a wind farm there, and they take up about this much of the vista, and I wonder what will happen when we make that 15 times, or maybe more, maybe less. But it's going to be a significant impact on our vistas, our hunting opportunities, and habitat. And as you know, habitat is for sage grouse. I can't stand to eat those little critters at all. But they seem to be pretty important these days. What are we going to do about the habitat issues? And I wonder about the hunting opportunities for big game animals. I mean, honestly, do you think that people are going to tolerate having a lot of hunters with high-powered rifles running around their wind turbines? I don't think that's going to be high on their list of compatible uses. There's a lot of significance here. When it comes to the distribution of the proceeds of this tax, I wonder if we're thinking about these impacts. Obviously, we are some part in terms of the infrastructure for counties, and those are significant. Roads, bridges, you know, those heavy concrete trucks, all that construction activity. But what about the impacts to our natural resources? And why don't we think about maybe taking a little bit of this tax revenue and using it to enhance our outdoor wildlife hunting mitigation in those areas? And I'm not thinking very much. I'm thinking maybe 2%. And I don't know how to do it, but maybe through the Wildlife Trust Fund, not the corpus, but through the operating account made just to mitigate these impacts. I'd like some discussion of that issue, and we could, you know, to see, because that is very significant in Wyoming's future.
Thank you, Senator Case, and for your mathematics. We appreciate that exercise and that information. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree totally with, well, I'll never say totally. I agree mostly with the good senator from Lander. Those are all impacts that we have to discuss, folks, and that's why the rate is low. He told you how that affects. It has a very minimal effect this time. It doesn't take place for 3 years. In the interim, we hope to study those very issues. It is very well put that we may not like a lot of the impacts, but let me remind you once more, this bill really doesn't deal with that. This bill is a tax. We had discussions about how it should be distributed, whether it should be more to the state, more to the county. It was suggested that some maybe should be put in the Wildlife Trust Fund, and maybe it should. But I think before we do that, we need to study it in the interim, come up with some ideas of how much impact it is going to have on wildlife. Maybe that's a good thing to do, is have a couple of percentage go into the Wildlife Trust Fund. But those are all things that we need to study as this moves forward. The bill that will deal mostly with the viewscapes and all of those is a bill that's still coming tomorrow or the next day, hopefully. And those will be the time that we will try to figure out what kind of regulation we're going to have and what kind of control we're going to have and some of those other things that the county is going to do. This is a tax bill. If you don't like the distribution formula of the 60-40, that's amendable. We all know that. I think we should leave it as it is until we go through the interim study and figure out all of those questions that was mentioned by the Chairman of Revenue. And then perhaps we'll want to change it. But in the meantime, I urge your support and passage of this legislation.
Thanks, Senator Larson. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to some of the other questions, particularly from my colleague from the Mother County. In terms of the wording on page 2, lines 20 through 22, we identify the source, the exact place where the tax is levied, because in order to avoid any controversy or conversation about the Interstate Commerce Clause, that's the point we need to value it before it goes on a national distribution system. I mean, that's, we say, this is it. Okay, now it can go national. We'll send out a green electron that's going to light up the world for all we care. But we're taxing it at a local facility rather than a national grid. In terms of over on page 3, on line 16 through 19, what we're doing there is we're trying to let these farms ramp up with a basically a tax holiday, if you will, that they get that window and say, you know, folks, you know, you bring them online, you know, you don't just build one of these towers and then get some poor guy up there on the end of blade and hook two wires together. It's a lot more elaborate than that. They, as I understand, when they energize one of these fields, say it's a, I don't know what it is, 20 of these big turbines, you bring them on and, you know, in some sort of sequence, and the bigger the field, as I understand, the longer the sequence is, you know, to bring them online. We want them to do that. We want them to do it right. We're not trying to hammer the wind industry. What we're trying to say is, you know, go do it, but let's talk about how we're going to do it. There was a question on the, what other states do. I don't know the answer to that. You know, when you start comparing tax structures state to state, you got to be very careful. We levy a tax on wind. We don't levy a corporate income tax. We levy a property tax. Our property tax actually is incredibly low compared to, say, our good neighbors up in Montana or over in Nebraska or down in New Mexico. New Mexico does tax their wind generation electricity, although when I say that, I caution you, it's in court right now. So it's in court. That probably says all we need to say about, you know, who knows where it's going to come out at. So that's the size of it. I think my colleague who could compute what this is actually, what the state does, so we all know it's what it's going to cost us. I think that answers all the questions from the Mother County.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief and just simply say, as a member of the task force and as chairman of the task force, what you've heard this afternoon is absolutely accurate and consistent with what the feelings of the task force as we made our recommendations. The task force, given the broad study, the broad concepts, said in regard to the revenue issues and sensing and seeing many of the complexities of the revenue tax issue as been described to you today, opted really to stay silent in regard to any particular revenue or method of taxation, except to say the task force does recommend that the Joint Revenue Committee comprehensively study the issues surrounding taxation. That's quite consistent with what you've heard. The other statement is that the legislature conduct a careful examination. That, again, references the, I think, need of a very careful interim study. And so with that, I would simply say, from my view, this is the report that came out of the task force. It can be accessed online. There are three members of that task force in this body, one of which is in the chair, I being the other being the good senator from the western part of the county or state. We would be glad to sit down with you and look at this report and talk with you about any of the issues being discussed. But again, I would again thank the Joint Revenue Committee for their careful attention to this issue, and I think their direct attention in regard to the recommendation that came out of the task force. And I would urge your generous consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on page 2, line 22, and where there are several bills moving through the process. The word transmission, we talked about collector lines, we talked about transmission lines. We just got to be really careful that where we actually tax the wind because of the losses as we transmit those electrons down the wires. So I want to be sure that I think you want to get it right when they produce it, as soon as it goes into maybe the collector system, rather than a transmission line, because that definition is being looked at, and you could argue that the transmission line is the one that goes to take the power out of the state or wherever, one of those high-powered lines. We may want to look at that definition.
Thanks, Senator Bebout. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up. The good senator from Park County had set into this area. I would like to have a little better understanding why we went from $3 to $1 on that. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding in visiting with the powers that be that brought this bill to us, it was reduced down in part, I think, to show good faith to the industry, that we're not saying it's got to be $5 a kilowatt hour or two. It's to say we don't know what the rate of taxation should be. I think that's part of the interim study. And the idea that it can go to one, that's about as low as those folks could go. I don't know. But it was the idea, it is not the rate of taxation, it is to bring folks to the table and work this out the way I think we're unique among states, that when we're confronted with a problem, we try and get everybody gathered around a table and say, how are we going to make this deal work? And so at this point, the rate of taxation is somewhat irrelevant, particularly given that the tax will not be imposed until after all the interim work is done. It seems to me that the two go hand in hand.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Further, there was a lot of discussion on whether we want to discourage wind in Wyoming, encourage wind in Wyoming. What is the proper tax rate? How much time should they be given? What the rate's going to be? And basically the 1 cent I think was arrived at because it was decided we don't want to discourage or send out the message that we don't want wind producers in Wyoming. Now there are some who favor it, as you know, and some who think we shouldn't tax anything. And this was kind of a balance to get this in place so that we don't lose out on those that are going to maybe be building and doing things prior to us getting a real handle on what the rate should be, what the regulation should be, and all of those things. So the good chairman of revenue was right. This, I look at at least, as kind of a placeholder, but it was kind of a balance between those who say 3 cents will discourage them. I don't think 3 cents would. But nevertheless, there were those who said, no, we shouldn't tax anything. You're gonna run them all off, and we want that as a source of revenue and a source of energy. So I'm the last to tell you it's a balance between trying to encourage or discourage wind generation in the state. With regard to the question of taxation and the Constitution and so on, we did have testimony about that in committee, of how we're treating this versus other resources. And I don't claim to be an attorney, at least I don't claim to be an attorney today. But it is looked at, if you're looking at this as that you're taxing electrons, it isn't a problem. If you're looking at coal as to what it produces in electrons, there could be a problem. But I think we're taxing coal by the ton, we're taxing oil by the barrel, we're taxing natural gas by how many it produces. And in this case, we're not taxing those things, we're taxing electrons. And there are those attorneys who have said that they think it is constitutional, it's the right way to do it. Do we know that? Absolutely not, but we'll sure find that out in the interim.
Thanks, Senator Larson. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, I apologize for my voice, but I think this is perhaps the place where I might appropriately give the position statement of those members on the task force. And again, this position statement is that of 9 members of a task force. In no way does it represent the position of the entire body. But I would say to you, this is certainly my position, and I think the position that was adopted by those members of the task force. If you would just bear with me for a second or two, I would like to just give you some pieces of the initial position statement from the first paragraph of the report. I think it's important for you to hear this, and I think it's important for the people of Wyoming, as well as the developers, to hear what the position of the task force after some considerable study and listening, I think, to all parties in the wind industry. We say, or at least a task force said, that the wind industry task force believes that there are significant benefits to Wyoming from the responsible development of substantial wind industry. Wind industry could bring Wyoming from a transitional phase to a transformational stage in energy development. The task force believes that Wyoming must work to diversify its energy portfolio in response to a market which is placing increasing value on energy supplies created by renewable sources. Mindful of the benefits of the wind energy developments, the task force recognizes that a lack of appropriate regulation may impact Wyoming's quality of life and its wildlife and environmental resources. Wind development in Wyoming should be promoted and regulated in a way that maintains the fledgling industry's competitiveness, which promotes job opportunities and economic development, which addresses its impact on Wyoming's communities, wildlife, and landscapes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Anderson. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Listening to this debate on both the rate of taxation and on some of the other issues that are associated with wind development, Mr. Chairman, sounds to me like deja vu all over again. I was here for part of the debate on the coal severance tax, the development of the coal industry, and the impact of that. And we were talking about much the same kind of issues. Level of taxation, appropriateness of regulation, and about in the same terms. And The resolution that the legislature came to in those days on the tax rate was that, yes, a rate of taxation was appropriate, but that we had to be careful not to be too greedy. And we weren't too greedy. And our neighbors in Montana were. And the result is the Powder River Basin development and the economic benefits associated with that occurred mostly in Wyoming and only in small part over the line in the part of the Powder River Basin, the Fort Union coal that is in Montana. And they never recovered from being too greedy. And so I think as we think about the rate of taxation, that we are much smarter to err on the side of coming in on the low side. Because remember here, our competitors are not just in Montana, where the rest of the Powder River Basin coal was. But it strikes me that almost every state in the Union has plenty of wind. We may have some of the best sites. We may have some advantages. Certainly anybody that's lived with Wyoming wind can believe that's possibly true. But in order to strike the balance that will serve this state best and get the wind developed and contribute to what this nation is trying to do in alternative energy, it seems to me we're much smarter staying, as this bill does, on the low side of the possibilities of taxation, so that the industry understands it's going to have to contribute some because it's going to contribute to the expenses that the state government and the county governments and the society is going to have. But we'll still need the benefits of the development, and I think there's some very good wind development that is possible and is occurring. So I urge we support the bill at the current level, and maybe in sometime in the future we'll have the information to do a better job of setting the rate. But I think this is a reasonable compromise on this and a reasonable way to proceed.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it is so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 101, say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 101 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 24. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 24, sponsored by Representative Cohey, insurance requirements for newly purchased vehicles, and act relating to motor vehicle registration. It was assigned to committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Platern, Senator Von Platern, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Platern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 24, Insurance requirements for newly purchased vehicles. And, Mr. Chairman, I hope that we don't generate quite as much wind on this bill as we did the last. But what this bill does just clarify what is already in statute. Some of us would take it literally as written prior to this bill and understand that when I pick up another vehicle, buy another car, that I need to have insurance on it. This is state to demand some liability insurance on your car. Well, there's those that will argue that it said originally no owner of motor vehicle required to be registered shall operate or permit the operation of his motor vehicle without insurance. So the time at which they picked it up and the temporary plates are on to the point that they absolutely had to register it, they were running around without insurance. So this just clarifies page 1, line 12, little a, no owner of a motor vehicle currently required to be registered or which is required to be registered within a period of time shall operate or permit the operation of his motor vehicle without having in full force and effect a motor vehicle liability insurance. And that is the rest of it is existing language. That is the only change. So when you pick up another vehicle, you know that it has to be insured from that moment that you take possession until you get rid of it. Just clarification of the statutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Unflater. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 24, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 24 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 27. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 27, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution, and Act Relating to Special License Plates. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, and Landon. No, Senator Von Flader and Senator Von Flader and Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Von Flader?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that they do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 27, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution, and I yield to Senator Landon to explain this bill.
Thank you. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the Chairman of our Transportation Committee. Fellow Senators, this is a request that came to us during the interim to the Transportation and Military Affairs Committee. From our veterans and military affairs folks, this tidy little House bill does two things. It returns the fee for an armed services license plate to the $30 that is charged for every other specialty plate in our state. It also allows for the $20 additional fee that we added in the legislation last year. It allows for that additional $20 fee to go straight to the Wyoming Veterans Commission. That's the two things that the bill does. You'll notice that it affects the statute under special plates. The reference to the cost of a specialty plate, if you'd like to look that up, that's 31.3.102, line 9 on page 2. Every other specialty plate is $30. A regular plate, by the way, costs $15. So a specialty plate is double the cost. That means that the Department of Transportation will be getting additional money and that the $20 fee will go to the Veterans Commission. I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I've never been a fan of these special plates in the first place, and this is one of the – this is – the next step down the slippery slope, so to speak. Now we're talking about sending money over to the Veterans Commission by the purchase of these plates. They apparently, this is the way to get around the constitutional directive that all the money has to go to the Highway Department. So my first question would be, if we're doing this with the Armed Forces plates, there are a whole bunch of other plates out there. There's fireman plates and I can't even think of paramedic plates. And so why, if we're going to do this for them, why wouldn't we do this for all the other groups? Why, if this bill passes, why wouldn't the firefighters come to us next year and ask to do the same thing, say, for the fireman's retirement fund? My other question is, is there going to be a, given the estimated $20,000 drop to the highway fund and the additional $20,000 to the Veterans Commission, is there going to be a $20,000 deduction from the Veterans Commission appropriation? Or is this just extra money the Veterans Commission is getting at the cost of the highway fund?
Thanks, Senator Burns. Senator Landon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do my best to answer the questions of the good senator from up north. Quite frankly, the veterans don't mind paying that additional fee for their plates. Their request of us is that they simply have an opportunity to help their own. Because the veterans buy these plates, they thought it appropriate that these funds, some of them, would go to the account that would supplement funds to help with their communication efforts with fellow veterans. That's the plain and simple answer. The veterans are the ones paying for the plates. They're the ones that are paying that additional money, and their request of our transportation committee was that some of that fee go in that direction. In answer to whether or not this opens the door for other groups or organizations to come and ask for money to be diverted, certainly I suppose that could. Absolutely, we could consider that at a future date, but I can't answer that. Some of those specialty plates that you see are provided by the state. Some are not. This is a veteran plate. These are developed and purchased by the veterans, and that's why these plates were put in place a year ago. The veterans just want to try to help their own.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I paid $50 for mine, and I didn't mind paying $50 at all. But I can tell you I would much rather have that $50 go to the Veterans Commission, where it would go to help assist the veteran service officers that travel our state. We have a lot of veterans out there that don't know what their rights and benefits from the federal government or from the state government are. And unless a veteran service officer from the commission is able to go there, hold meetings in town, and meet with each one of those individuals, they're never going to know that. And so, again, when I got the plate, I knew it was going to YDOT. When I have to renew the plate, I would much rather it go to the Veterans Commission to help the brothers. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Johnson. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, my question was not answered as to whether there is a corresponding decrease in the appropriation to the Veterans Commission. Keep in mind, the Veterans Commission is an arm of the state government. It receives an appropriation. The people who work for the Veterans Commission are state employees. If we want to give this Veterans Commission more money, we should do that directly by appropriation. If we're not giving them enough money, then we should increase the appropriation to them. This idea of earmarking license plates to go to the commission, I think, takes away a lot of the oversight on the part of the legislature to the Veterans Commission on how they spend the money. We appropriate the money to them. They are answerable to us to how that money is spent. Start giving them money in an indirect way through the license plates. They're no longer answerable to the legislature for the funds. And remember, these are state employees. The other thing to keep in mind is the money that's going to not be going to the highway fund as a result of this. The highway fund is already going to be taking a hit because of tight times in government, and I think this is the wrong time to start pecking away on the edges. This is nothing against the Veterans Commission. This is nothing against the veterans, but this is something that has been tried by every specialty group in the last 15, 16 years I've been in the legislature. If it's not the veterans, it's the firemen. It's always a good, deserving group, but this is not the way to fund them.
Thanks, Senator Burns. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to explain the fiscal note, which is all wrong. And if you read down below it, you can see how it's wrong. It really should say that the highway fund would receive, if 1,000 specialty plates are sold a year, they'll get the $30 personalized license plate fee. So they should actually show 30,000 going across. And the veterans would get $20 times 1,000. They should show 20,000 in increased revenue. What the mistake, where it shows a negative 20 grand in the first year, the person that put this together had in her mind that it was going to be 20 grand less received by the highway funds than what they had projected, because the 20,000 is going to the Veterans Commission Expendable Trust Fund. And I would agree with you, and I was the no vote in committee, that this does open the door up for any connected type government without a constitutional issue of raising funds. So I was a no vote in committee.
Thanks, Senator Von Flatern. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do apologize to the senator from up north. I didn't mean to miss that question on the footnote, and I appreciate our good chairman explaining that. That was a little bit muddied up in committee. This is really a shell game. If you want to come down to this $20,000 worth of anticipated revenue, if our veterans step up and buy these plates, any of the money that comes as a result of this certainly can supplant any general fund monies that we don't want to send to the Veterans Commission in the future. I do know this. We've got a lot of veterans that are going to be coming home soon. We've got a lot more veterans now in our state. And I think some of the communication work that they do is very, very valuable. We already learned through the budget process the last couple of days that the Secretary of State's office has had to quit publishing some of its publications because of the rising cost of that. I think it's a pretty worthy cause. I think it's a reasonable consideration for us. The $20 fee just goes to the Veterans Commission. I would urge your support of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I also think that we shouldn't say that this is opening the door. It seems to me that the door was opened by the university which went through it, and it's therefore quite open.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Fladen's motion that the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 27, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
That motion has failed. Division being called for, all those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Okay. All right. I guess that means that House Bill 27 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 56. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 56, sponsored by the School Facilities Committee, bonded indebtedly. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Session, Von Fladen, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Thank you for the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Chairman, I'd move when Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a do pass from the House Bill 6, Senator Jennings.
Thanks, Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a phase out of a program in conversion from when the school districts used to raise their own money through bonds and all that kind of stuff to what we do now when the state goes in and builds the schools. We had these bonds, a lot of them with the poorer districts, and what they were doing, they can do is they can refund them so they can keep the same bond going and going. So all this bill does is down on page 1, line 15, it strikes all the language to where you can refund. Now the state is in there doing their thing. These bonds paid out. It's going to save us in the tune of about $3.7 million per year is what we're spending on these bonds. Since this all happened before I ever showed up around here, I stand for corrections or questions.
Thank you, Senator Jennings. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Which schools are going to have to come up with $3.7 million, which districts?
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, actually, the program, the mill levy supplement program, goes back a long ways. It goes back prior to some of the court cases that we heard. We remember in Campbell, too, that's when the court said that building schools will no longer be a function of local wealth, be a function of state wealth. We created, as I recall, the mill levy supplement program to aid those districts and have the local valuation. In other words, HLET could levy bonds out there, pass on issue, much more successful than even. This is a state assistance program that goes back. Bonds still exist out there. We're involved with them. But it's the old program that we passed, I think, maybe in the early 90s or something to that effect. So I'll try to find out for you.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while you're looking at it, too, as I understand this program, it's primarily those school districts that had low values, and that's why we tried to help them. So this could really be an impact to some of those areas, but then again, they're probably not bonded in any other way. So It might offset that, but it'd still be nice to know.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 56. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 56 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 84. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 84, sponsored by Representative Bilkrey, Gold Star License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Dockstader, Escobel, Geis, Landon, Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask that he do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 84, Gold Star License Plate. Now I'll yield the floor to Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, at times we've heard of those who've lost their lives from this state in service of their country, and sometimes we know them personally, and if not, still a sense of loss because they're someone from Wyoming. And so with that thought, I bring you House Bill 84, Gold Star License Plates, and give you an explanation of it. This bill authorizes a special license plate for those specified relatives of soldiers who die during their service. It specifies the fees, specifies the qualifications, all of the requirements. Under 31.2.229, any person may apply who applies for this. They apply to the Veterans Commission for a statement of eligibility. It's to go on a motor vehicle, not a multi-purpose vehicle. Now, upon payment of the fee, and I'll note that fee here in just a moment, the Wyoming Veterans Commission shall issue a written statement of eligibility for the Gold Star plate. And this will only go to parents, grandparents, or spouses of a member of the armed forces who died while they're in service or who died as a result of the service. Those are the people who will be eligible to receive these plates. Application needs to be done within 30 days. Now, under A, B, C, and D, as we continue on, plates will be displayed on the vehicle. Renewal of these plates will be subject to the same requirements and fees as noted in the original article. The department shall prescribe the design of the Gold Star plate in consultation with the Veterans Commission. They'll arrange for production of the plates, and then the Gold Star plates shall be subject to redesign on the same schedule as all license plates beginning in 2017. Now, as continued as part of that explanation, let me note the fiscal information for you. $50 one-time application fee and $30 special license plate fee will be deposited into the highway fund. It's estimated there will be about 50 of these plates requested in the first 3 years, and this includes the parents of deceased Vietnam veterans as well. And the 3 years should see the peak of the request for the plates. And then the Department of Transportation, those costs will be approximately $2,000 to develop the initial logo for the plate, an additional $4,500 to make programming changes in the registration system, and the Veterans Commission estimates it will take approximately 3 days of administrative work to process about 50 requests. They're estimating 50 requests for this plate at a cost of approximately $1,350 per year. That process will be absorbed into the Veterans Commission staff with no additional expenditures. Ask for your favorable consideration. Stand for questions.
Thanks, Senator Dockstader. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. Three questions. I didn't quite hear the figure that it's going to cost the Veterans Commission. And I'm given to understand that the recipients of these Gold Star plates will get them for free. And the other question I have is, this is a great program. I really like this program. I'm wondering if other states haven't done this. Is there a national design out there so that if these people are driving in through, say, Minnesota or South Dakota, they would understand the people there would understand the significance of the Gold Star license plate?
Thanks, Senator Burns. Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know of a national design that's out there. I do need to make a clarification of the original $50 fee and then a $30 renewal fee, but I'm not aware of a national design that other states are using.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The national design on the gold stars is a white center, a red band around it, and a gold star in the middle. And in World War II, the families used that design with the blue star, saying that they had a member in the armed forces in Vietnam. Of course, it was never used, but there are a lot of blue stars in the red and white banner now in windows if you drive around the neighborhoods. But there is a national design. President Wilson created it in 1918.
Thanks, Senator Johnson. Are you ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Von Flaner's motion that when the committee will rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation, House Bill 84, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 84 is passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 109. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 109, sponsored by Representative Hammonds, Compulsory School Attendance 3, an act relating to compulsory school attendance. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Session, Von Flander, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Cole.
And defer to Senator Von Flader for an explanation of the House bill.
Thank you. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 109, Compulsory School Attendance. This bill doesn't change the requirements for graduation, so understand that. It is still 16 years old, 10th grade. What this bill does is involve the parent. All it requires is a signature from the parent to have a child quit school, or a student, young man at that time, quit school. If you go to line 14, page 1, it says, in addition to the subsection A of this section, which talks about being 16 years old or 10th grade, the parent, guardian, or other person having control, which is in statute now language, or charge of any child under the age of 18 who has not otherwise notified the district of enrolling that child in a different school district or in a private school or home-based educational program. So this took out all the ones that were worried that if the child was homeschooled, that this would interfere with their right to homeschool them, or if they moved into a different school in the district or moved. This does not affect that. They officially are transfer or they're being homeschooled. That's fine. But shall meet in person with a school district counselor or administrator to provide the school district with written consent to the withdrawal of that child from school. And you have to realize in Wyoming that you have to have parental permission under the age of 18 for a minor seeking a driver's license, marriage license, tattoos, body piercings, and body art. Where at this moment, if you hit 10th grade or 16 years old in high school, a kid can have a bad day in school and just walk. What this tries to do is engage the parent and just have them sign. It doesn't say, in fact, it says, it doesn't say they have to come to the school to sign. In statute, you'll see now where it says the school counselor is to counsel the parents and student on their options should that student decide to quit school. So what this bill just says is that we want a signature, whether the counselor has to go meet them at their house or along the road somewhere. But once again, it's how hard they want to pursue it is left up to your local school board. Once again, a tool for the local school district to try to engage the parents with their students' education. If it doesn't happen, well, there's a lot of things that aren't followed up with. Right now, if a child quits and does it illegally, I can tell you that not a lot of money and time is spent trying to chase them down. But right now, this would at least ask the parent and say, do you realize your child hasn't been in school? Sometimes that's a great surprise to a lot of parents. So this would say, yes, your child hasn't been there. We need a signature if you are giving him permission to quit school. So with that in mind, and we know dropout rates are the biggest single difference in a person's life, if they should drop out of school, we lose about 1 in 4 students in the state that don't graduate. They receive about 30% less album in this state. It costs the state money as well as the student himself. And, of course, without a diploma these days, you don't go a whole lot further. So I ask for your support of House Bill 109, and I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Inflator. Are you ready for the question? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I admire the intentions of this bill. But it seems to me, in fact, what you're doing for a child that's going to quit, first of all, they're not going to go through the hassle of hassling with their folks to get them to come down. They're just, that's just, maybe it'll happen, but it's not going to happen very frequently. They're going to take a hike is what they're going to do. And they're going to end up crashing somewhere else just to avoid this, if no other reason. I don't think it's going to help attendance rates. I don't think it's going to keep kids in school. I think it has the negative or the potentially negative impact of a child that says, I'm going to quit, of making sure they don't go home where their parents can catch up with them, or where they feel, I got to go get my parents involved in my business, which they probably don't want to have happen. I don't think it'll get done what it's intended. And unfortunately, I think it may provide a kind of a false sense of, gee, we've done something about the dropout rate. And I think this does very little. Was there any discussion in committee about, what are the reasons for dropout? What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Quite frankly, the dropout rate is not the same. If you look district to district, there's a tremendous variation. A variation in terms of 10 or 15% better attendance in some districts and worser in others. Was there any thought, what are they doing right over there and what are they maybe not doing so right over here if we really want to address the problem?
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll try to answer some of that, particularly since my district is one that has a much higher rate. I think the thing that this bill will do, and I think the thing that may be the key issue in dropouts, and I don't have, nobody has all the answers to this issue, but if you can involve a parent, if you have a chance to get a parent in the door to try to work with you, to help you with the kid, you have a chance with him. But if you don't even make that effort, or if there is nothing that says you're going to have to make that effort, then you don't have a chance. You don't have a chance. But there are lots of kids that are free from their parents. I'll grant you that. But the issue is that you are responsible as a parent for your child until you're age 18. That doesn't mean except in school. It doesn't mean except anywhere else. If that kid wants to get a driver's license, he has to hunt that parent down, make them sign the driver's license. If he wants to get a tattoo, and you see a lot of kids wandering around with these tattoos, not every kid. I mean, you'll find people who will give a tattoo without a parental permission. But it does, and it was like it was put in committee. It's a speed bump. That's all it is. It's a speed bump that gives one more shot at that kid. And I'll tell you an oddity amongst schools that I've run into. In the media center library, in order for that kid to walk out the door, he had to come ask me to sign the dropout slip. I had to sign it as his librarian. His parent didn't. And I was at East a couple of years ago at that 9-week period in the library. I had to sign the dropouts. Guys, this wasn't the kid that was racing around half the night in a car or doing anything like that. He's not going to bother to ask anybody anything anyway at that point in his life. But I had two young ladies come in, and I talked to them quite a bit. They were lost in that system. They were lost in it. They had gotten behind. They were 10th graders. They didn't know what to do. Hey, all this does is say, hey, we have to look at this kid. We have to look at him. We have to provide one more chance, if we can get a hold of him, to say, let me sit down with you. Let me see if I can get a mentor in your life to help you get through the next semester. Let me help if I, let me see if I can find a social worker that can get you something to eat or help you with a problem at home or something like that. That's all this will do. There'll still be those kids that won't conform with that. They're the ones that are coming back to LCCC in droves now for an education, so to speak. They finally wised up, I guess, after a few years of hard knocks. But it won't solve very many things. But what it will do, and, you know, local control is a wonderful thing, but it might be time for us to say, hey, guys, your responsibility goes beyond letting that kid walk out the door. You have to make the effort with a parent. So, thank you for listening.
Thanks, Senator Sessions. Senator Ron Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the good senator from KC brings up a point that this bill is trying to address. Yes, that child is not going to go home if he's dropping out of school. In fact, he'll leave at 7:15 in the morning if that's the time he normally leaves for school, and he'll go hang out on a friend's place, or he won't come home at all. What this says is that the school, the child is under 18, the young person is under 18, the school has to get a hold of the parents, which is supposed to be a legitimate contact information at the school district, and say, do you realize your child hasn't been here? And he's past being just truant, missing a day, unexcused. He hasn't been here for several. Great surprise to the parent, maybe. And we need you to sign a document. And in statute today, it says that the council with students, parents, what it says for attendance officers today in statute, says they will counsel students, parents, guardians or custodians, and teachers, and to investigate the causes of unexcused absences. So they are supposed to do that much today. But if the fact is the kid is 16 and just walks out of school, that next step is never taken. They just write them off, or could just write them off. And you're absolutely right. Graduation rate in my district is roughly in that high 70s, mid-70s. There's districts in the low to mid-60s, and there's districts that are sitting almost at 100%, some of the small school districts. Huge variation, but it's the contact with the folks, which is the small school district, great graduation rate, versus the very large city districts where there'll be pretty much no contact with parents. And all this says is if that child is missing, they need a signature, whether they go visit the parent or the parent comes to school. And maybe that conversation will start, and maybe that counseling will start, and maybe it'll be a wake-up call for the parent as much as the student. So I ask for your support of this bill. It won't cure it all, but it's a good start to keep that contact going.
Thank you. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 109, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 109 is passed committee of the whole. The next House bill for our that's the wrong one. Next House bill for consideration is House Bill 110. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 110, sponsored by Representative McComey, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs, and Act Relating to Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flatern, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cole?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with the do-pass recommendation on House Bill 110. This bill just actually does two things. It allows the university with their endowment program to accumulate funds until such time as matching funds might be available from the state. It goes across and does the same thing for community colleges. If you look on the last page of the bill, however, you'll see in paragraph M, nothing in this section obligates the legislature to match accumulated endowment gifts authorized under this section. The legislature reserves the right to modify or terminate this program. So that's all this bill does. It allows the university and community colleges to accumulate endowment gifts until such time as matching funds might become available. If you recall, we started, I think, with this endowment program with the university, I think, with $50 million originally. I think we put another $25 million in there. The seven community colleges, we came up with a program. I think it was $35 million divided by seven. We had $5 million to each college out there. We actually came back in because four of the colleges, I think it was Northern and Sheridan, Northwest, Casper College and LCCC, added some more money to that fund, I think, 2 years ago. So that's all this bill does. It allows the university and these colleges to accumulate funds as to such time the match might kick in if we were to appropriate more money for this program. Try to answer questions on the bill.
Thanks, Senator Cole. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can see what's happening, and it's now a change in philosophy. When we began this program, it wasn't a program to substitute or alter the small gifts that people typically get. The idea was to go out and get substantial gifts from folks and to enhance or encourage people to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. Now, to the extent that we're saying we're going to match accumulations, so anybody that gives a gift that they would normally give every year, you give $1,000 a year, then they accumulate 50 of those, and now they get the grant dollars. That's different. I mean, that really isn't how we started the plan. What we started the plan was to really reach out and get extraordinary gifts, and that's what we're matching. I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but it is a change.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the language, for instance, on page 3 here, it says nothing in this paragraph prohibits the university foundation from accumulating substantial endowment gifts until such time as state matching funds become available. So I think the intent of that, if I recall, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that we only matched in this program $10,000 gifts or more. And maybe the good senator from Laramie over there, one of you can answer that question. I can't recall exactly what it was. But I think that's the definition of substantial.
Thanks, Senator Cole. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer that question, for the university, it's $50,000 or more, and for the colleges, it's $10,000 or more.
Thanks, Senator Massey. Are you ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Cole's motion, the one that the Committee of the Whole rise and... Yes, Senator Larson, I'm sorry.
Well, I was late. I'm sorry, too. I think we need to consider something in this bill, and I've been a co-sponsor of everyone that's gone through all the time it's there. But I have a little bit of a concern, and I think we can deal with it with an amendment on second reading, that the people giving the gifts aren't going to be aware that there isn't any matching funds out there. And so I'm a little bit concerned that it requires a notification of those who are giving the gifts, that they appreciate their gift and they hope to be able to have it. Because I can see it putting tremendous pressure on this legislature to match the gifts that are out there and have been accumulated without the givers knowing that at this point in time, there are no matching funds. And so I think we can deal with that on perhaps, second reading, but I think that's important that those people giving the money know that the state of Wyoming may or may not come up with the matching portion to match their grant. So I have a little concern with that. We can deal with it on second reading, and I urge you to support the bill.
Thanks, Senator Larson. Senator Jennings.
We did talk about that in committee, and they said that the university said that they would probably have some kind of a notification. But they also said that when the matching funds really comes into play is where they have somebody that's right on the line, and NRIA's not ready to sign the check yet, and they said, well, we can match your funds, and then a lot of times that pushes them over. But in testimony, that was addressed, and so everybody should be going out with it, and an amendment would probably clean it up.
Thanks, Senator Jennings. Are you ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it is so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 110, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 110 has passed Committee of the Whole. If you, just a minute, you've been outranked. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this would be the appropriate time for us to stand at ease for about 10 minutes or sound of the gavel. When you come back, look at the bottom of the board, some of the bills that just were read in from committee. I won't change the order of those currently posted, but I'm going to put some up so you know what's going to happen later today, perhaps, or early tomorrow. With that, I would move for be at ease until the sound of the gavel.
Okay. Before we do that, Senator Von Flatern has just urged, something urgent has struck Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we recess and they leave, I'd like the Senate to please welcome to back again this year the Gillette Area Leadership Group, and they're on your right, and I think behind us, too. Would you please stand?
Welcome to the Senate. We hope you enjoy your day. Leadership, Gillette. We've heard the motion. All those in favor, recess, the sound of the gavel? Oh, no, we just in recess, the sound of the gavel. Forget it. Don't vote.
No, I'm just going to vote not to buy the building. Aren't you on that thing with me?
I'm following that one. I'm following the other one. I want to make sure we don't have that tax. I don't
want to
take a tax.
Okay. So, yeah. Do you can borrow my camera if you want. Okay.
Hey, snuggle over there.
Well, get the gavel. Pick up the gavel. Get the gavel.
There you go.
No, act like you're going to hit something, not your sister.
Smile at us out here. There you go.
Who are these kids?
I don't know, but they're...
They're taking over.
They're taking over?
Are you Cheyenne kids? Yes. Are you?
Show your mommy
Okay, we're at 9 minutes and 30 seconds.
Well, you guys done that, ready?
That's right.
Yeah,
we've got work to do, man. We've got to get to this pile. Like, we're trying. A little bit. Are you ready? What about? Yeah. Well, Jim's okay. We're ready. All right. Dick's back. You ready? What time is it? We've been.
Well, it's 10:21.
10:21. We're 20 seconds late.
Yep, 20 seconds late.
May the whole come back to order. Yeah, it's, I don't think we have enough yet. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
1,
14,
2, 3, 4.
When Peterson gets on the floor, we're there, aren't we?
Yeah.
There we go. Senator, come back to her. Here we go. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 124. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 124, sponsored by Representative Brown, Lien Statement Notice, an act relating to liens. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, we don't have Senator Ross. Who's on our Judiciary Committee? Yes. Thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Ross.
Chairman, I move that when the committee hold rises
ahead,
to
Senator.
Report that Ross get here on time to do his own bills.
So thank you, Senator Nicholas. Senator Ross, what is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee the whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 124. There are no committee amendments. It would yield back to the good senator from Albany County.
Well, you're going to do it.
You want me to do it? It's pretty easy. I'll do the bill. This goes into Article 3 in, or Chapter 3 in the liens. Has nothing to do with the bill that we previously passed. This is in the oil and gas area. And the statute basically says that the county clerks send out the lien notice. In all practicality and reality, it is the lien claimant who prepares all the documents, prepares all of that. Sometimes there could be as many as 100 different notices that go out, particularly in bigger projects. And, of course, it was brought by the county clerk saying, we have to bear the expense of the postage. Well, the reality is that what really happens is the lien claimant sends out the notice and bears that expense. And so this just cleans that up. It's a simple fix. And would urge your favorable consideration.
Thanks, Senator Ross. Other questions? Senator Bevout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, the person filing wants to make sure it's filed, so they're going to want to get it filed. But what this does is if they should do something that they shouldn't do and it doesn't get filed, before you could talk to the county clerk, you might have a way back into it. Now, if they don't give it, then there could be a loop in it being perfected. Is that right? I can't see them doing it because they want the lien filed anyway, but that could happen.
Thanks, Senator Bebas. Senator Ross. Oh, no, Senator Nicholas.
In most instances, you have to do a lien certification. So before, you just file an affidavit. The clerk did the file the lien statement. Now the lien claimant does it. Either way, the lien claimant is required to demonstrate that it got notification. So if you don't do the notice, then it's defective.
Thanks, Senator Nicholas. Question, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion with the committee, the whole rise to report, to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 124, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 124 is passed committee. The whole next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 8.
House Joint Resolution 8, sponsored by Representative Davidson. Opposition to Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act, a joint resolution requesting Congress to oppose House Resolution 980, titled the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation for House Joint Resolution 8, Opposition to Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a clear and concise explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from the southwest part of the state.
Thank you. That must be Senator Cooper.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment here, but I'll go ahead through the bill and then let the sponsor of the amendment cover that amendment. If you'll notice on your desk, you have a little map here, and this basically talks about what this bill is all about. And if you want to look at that, you can read through what that has to say about the bill. Mr. Chairman, this is just simply a resolution requesting Congress to oppose the House Resolution number 980, which is now in the United States House of Representatives, and it's being sponsored by a lady who is an Eastern Congresswoman, and most of us probably heard the name, which I will not give at this time. And it is H.R. 90, which would designate an additional 6,514,000 acres of national forest in Wyoming. And I understand that actually Wyoming already has the most wilderness area of any other state in the United States. And anyway, and now moving on down to page 2. That was all over on page 1. I'm sorry, Senators. But on page 2, if you look on lines 19 through 21, this states basically that the United States Congress does not customarily make wilderness designations without first seeking concurrence with the United States, with the states affected, And you would think that would be at least the minimum they could do is consult with us since it's going to be within our state. And over on page 3, Mr. Chairman, in section 1 there, just at the end of section 1, it talks about what this resolution is asking. This resolution is asking, hereby request that the United States House of Representatives Natural Resource Committee oppose this legislation. And that is what the bill is all about, Mr. Chairman. It's just a resolution. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. We're on the bill. Do we want to deal with the amendment at this time? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution Number 8. We all talk about the benefits of a joint resolution, what they may or may not do. What this amendment does, Mr. Chairman,
Senator
is Bebout, that the link?
Can you give us just a second so we can read it in?
Oh, I thought you had. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
House Joint Resolution 8, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 13.
Chairman, I now move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 8.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. You're on a roll. Please
continue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What it does is, I started to say, it adds some language with a request that this resolution be officially entered into the congressional record as a memorial to the Congress of the United States of America. We're going to go to all the effort to do this. We ought to put it in the congressional record. Maybe sometime down the road it'll come up and we'll see it there. Otherwise, it just gets lost in the shuffle. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Okay, we're on the amendment. Ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 8, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Ready for the Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to point out that this foolish congressional bill has come back routinely now. With remarkable regularity. For the last 10 years, it has gone nowhere. It's not going to go anywhere right now. It's just something else to be scared about. We can go ahead and send a resolution back there, and like the bill, it probably is not going to have much of an effect.
Thank you, Senator Massey. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of House Joint Resolution 8, all those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report that it is so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution 8, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Joint Resolution 8 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 10. For the reading. Oh, yes. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Good. Mr. Chairman, just a reminder, third reading amendments are due at 5 o'clock. It's about an hour away.
Thank you, Mr.
Third reading budget amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Go ahead and please read the bill.
House Bill 10, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Electrical Safety Low Voltage Licensing, and Act Relating to Electrical Safety. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. No, Senator Case and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to take up this shocking development from the Corporations Committee and ask that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 10, Electrical Safety, Low Voltage Licensing. To explain the bill, I'd like to yield to Senator Cooper, who's
thank
a
you.
Shocking former shocker himself.
Thanks, Senator Case. Senator Cooper.
Here I am again, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 10 is... was actually assigned, topic was assigned to us by the interim topic as an interim topic for study, and as a result of that study and discussions that we had during the interim, this is the bill that resulted from those discussions. The changes that were brought forth in this bill are supported by the Department of Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety. It is supported by the cable industry and the telecommunications industry, all of which we participated in the committee's discussions, and we were able at that time to address their concerns and any they may have, and these concerns were borne out in this bill. Going through the bill now, if we look at page 2 on lines, we'll start on page 2, lines 8 and 10, because that's where the changes actually start. Page 2, lines 8 through 10, first of all. All this does here on those lines is just says that you don't have to be a master electrician in order to receive a limited electrical contractor's license. And then moving on down to, up to page 3 now, excuse me. I'm a little bit confused here. Page 3 at the top on those lines 1 and 2 there. This is just a new inclusion for the lawn and sprinkler control wiring to include them also under the limited electrical contracting licensing. And you got to understand each one of these fell centers have their expertise in their various areas and their individual classifications for low voltage licensing. In section 35924, which is also on page 3, we have the powers of the State Electrical Board there. And what we're doing there is it gives the board authority to adopt rules and regs to establish minimum standards for not only training but licensing requirements and reciprocal agreements with other states. The committee felt that it was not clear between how the chief electrical inspector's office actually issues licenses and what the requirements are and what the board's duties and responsibilities were for writing that. So we've now got it clarified that the actual state electrical board writes the rules and regs, and then the licenses are now issued according to those rules by the chief electrical inspector's office. There was some confusion as to before or whether the chief electrical inspector was actually writing the rules, and this kind of clarifies that. So it defines the fact that it's the board's responsibility to write the rules, and the chief's job is to issue the licenses according to those rules, but the board does not issue the licenses. And section 35.9.1.26, which starts right at the bottom of page 3 there and then goes up to page 4, if I can get the page open. This is on lines 23 and 24 there at the bottom of page 4, and also up on page 5 on lines 1 through 9. This was just some wordsmithing to try to better clarify how the credit would be given for classwork or for training in an electrical school. And overall, the department really has the discretion on what credit they will give or how they will accept these credits, because different, like if you go to a military school, it may have different class requirements than if you go to a local Voc-Tech school where they actually train in residential wiring or commercial wiring or whatever. So, and then also in section 2 on page 5, we get into, in line 11, and we talk about the repealer. And what the repealer is, that takes out the exemption in the current law for the cable TV contractors, which we put in before. And I would say, though, the cable TV people have been involved with this process as we went along, and they have already gotten with the department to work out a 90-day training program for their employees along with a testing program for the technicians, which would apply and meet this law that we've now got here. So with that, I stand for questions.
Thank you for the electrifying explanation, Senator Cooper. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I was rising on and against the bill. I was one of the no votes in committee, and I think this bill is taking us the wrong direction. The and this issue has been around for a while. The trouble is the repealer. The repealer is, as you heard, the repeal of the current exemption for the cable TV, et cetera, installers. And it seems to me that the thing to do is to not repeal that exemption, but probably to broaden it. And I think that's been the position of the Senate in the past. The problem I have with this is I think you're just putting an unnecessary regulatory burden on an unnecessary requirement for a licensure, and all it's going to do is run the costs up for our constituents a little bit. And, yeah, the groups that you hear from are in favor of it. I think they think that it's a way of restricting competition. For a general discussion of this subject, I would commend the Senate. There's a chapter in Milton Friedman's book, Capitalism and Freedom, on occupational licensure. And it explains how economically these things work, how they restrict the free enterprise system, how they add to everybody's cost for services. And I think in this particular instance, Professor Friedman was dead right on, and that what we ought to be doing is getting rid of a lot of these licensure requirements. This bill goes the other way and makes it worse. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, I'm a no vote on this bill.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have made up my mind, but a couple of questions. On page 3, we talk about the installation, repair, maintenance of lawn sprinklers. Is that in there because now you have an exemption for those? And if you don't, then the concern I have is, at least up in Riverton, some of the people that install these sprinklers do it in the summer as a way to supplement their income. And they do these installation systems on a low-voltage side. Now we're going to require them to be licensed. And then they're also going to have 2 years of 16 hours worth of CLE instruction like I have to do with my master's license and those kinds of things. And if we're doing that, I just wonder about the logic, or did any of these people aware of it? Have they had a chance to express their opinions?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think the tall senator from Natrona County expressed my views very well. And I just wonder, after having moved on to a property and built a house barn and all the systems that have been described in this bill I had to install, or at least had a lot of it installed for me, and I just wonder what the cost might have been, how they might have been driven up had this bill been in place at that time. Again, I would ask you to reject this bill.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer my good friend from Fremont County, 359123 is exception. So installation, repair, and maintenance of lawn sprinkler control systems is an exception. They don't have to do that.
Thanks, Senator Johnson.
And, Mr. Chairman, keep in mind that any work you do around your home doesn't come under these acts at all.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I have never stood on this floor and been so torn. I was a no vote in committee as well, Mr. Chairman, but I do want to clear up a couple of things. And I would hope we'd pass this bill on to further readings and not spend a lot of time on it today, I suppose. With regard to the low-voltage sprinkler license, all that's really saying under 359123 is, yes, you get this waiver of everything under A, but that the waiver doesn't entitle you to violate the code. That's all it says. This requirement is waived. That's the requirement in lines 4 through 9. You waive it, but the following, however, the waiver does not exempt the following persons from meeting all other code requirements. Okay, so they're waived for the purposes of A, but they still have to do the code. That's all that says. So low voltage ones don't have to comply with I'm sorry, the sprinkler installers don't have to comply with A or all the subparts of it, but they do have to respect the code. This whole bill came about because we were trying to wrestle with the exemptions, and we found that the exemptions is really difficult. So in Saratoga, we were having a meeting, and we suggested, why don't you relook at the issue of low-voltage licensing? Why does it take 4,000 hours? That's crazy. That's where you really need to do it, because everybody comes in for an exemption because the board has made it so hard to get a license. So they go around them and get an exemption. And it looked like we were making progress, and that's ostensibly what's in this bill. At the same time, it's an equal footing thing between the telecom guys and the cable guys. Cable guys had an exemption. Telecom guys had an approved training program. Now with the repealer, the cable guys have an approved training program that they handle internally, and so they get the license, but they do the training program within their companies. It's no different than what they do now. Okay, all that being said, I really do think that they didn't meet the spirit of the corporation's committee's direction, that they really need to lower these requirements for the 4,000 hours. They have committed to do that, and if you see, it says up to 2 years or 4,000 hours, and they have promised that they will make it easy, but we have not seen anything in writing about that. So there's still some problems with this bill. I'm willing to admit it. That's why the committee is divided. I would hope, though, that we'd move it off this reading and finish our long days, and we can take this up if anybody offers any amendments.
Thank you, Senator Case. It looks like that's generated more comment from Senator Cooper.
Got to get the sparks moving here. Mr. Chairman, yeah, just quickly, I just on that repealer thing one more time. I guess it was kind of stated in a way. It was kind of to level the playing field for one thing, because, nowadays we have people installing telephones, install TVs, cable that install television, radio, and telephones, and it's sometimes you have to have a license for one part, not the other, and it was just a hodgepodge of things going on. This was just to kind of get it straightened out.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an old friend. I was on corporations several years ago, and we did it then. We killed it then. I voted no then. I'm going to vote no now.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Any further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion with the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it is so a favorable recommendation of House Bill 10, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 10 has failed committee. We have to do a standing vote. So, all right, we'll do the roll call vote. Oh, standing vote first. I'm sorry, we have to have our standing vote. All those in favor, please stand. Thank goodness for the clerk.
Nine.
All those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe? Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
no.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
no.
Larson,
no.
Martin,
no.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Meyer-S,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Ross, Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
no.
Sessions, Townsend,
no.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Hines, Ross,
no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 6 ayes, 24 noes.
Thank you. House Bill 10, having failed roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 5. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 5, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revisions, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 5, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revisions, and I truly do hope for your favorable consideration and yield the floor to Senator Scott.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is the latest installment in the effort by the insurance commissioners in this country to properly regulate the financial side of the insurance industry so that the companies stay solvent. I think it is notable, Mr. Chairman, that in this most recent financial crisis, the testimony we had in committee was that no major insurer has gone broke or had to be bailed out. Now, the media often identifies, in particular, one company, AIG, as being an insurance company, and it got in trouble, but it was not the insurance subsidiaries. They were properly regulated. So the state regulation of insurance companies for financial solvency, and they are major financial institutions for this country, has been remarkably successful in contrast to what's happened to some of the federally regulated companies. And in good part, it is this scheme that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners has developed for all the states regulating the financial solvency of these insurance companies. And this is just the most recent refinement. What this does is for property and casualty companies, brings them under the trend analysis as the very first step in indicating that a company may have trouble. You can see the language on page 3 of the bill. Basically, what's happening is if your trend is wrong and you fall below certain levels, then you've got to provide the insurance commissioner with a plan as to how you're going to get out of your financial trouble. It's just a very early warning. And frankly, I'm going on the recommendation of the national organization and our insurance commissioner because they have been extraordinarily successful in these tough financial times of keeping this major segment of our financial industry in this country out of trouble. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report that it is for the favorable recommendation of House Bill 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 5 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill 6, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, County Officials, Administrative and Fiscal Duties, an act relating to county officials. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 6, County Officials, Administrative and Fiscal Duties, and I would like to yield to Senator Johnson for an explanation of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we're bringing this at the request of the county clerks. They're asking that statutes reflect reality as to what's going on in this day and age. A quick overview. On page 2, they talk about county clerks are directed to give juror lists to the clerk of court from voters' lists. That's not happening right now. What's happening right now is the Supreme Court is combining the voters' list and the driver's license lists, and they are giving the county clerks of court the voter lists. And the in here it says the county clerk shall. They aren't, and so they want out of it. And that actually holds pretty true through the first part of that bill. The second part on page 4 is lines 2 to 3. Requires a July meeting to have a prepared statement of receipts and expenditures from the previous 12 months. Well, it's awful hard to have the commissioners to get that from the previous 12 months. There's just not enough time until that July meeting for it to be created. Line 7 through 9 gives the clerk and treasurer until September 30 to prepare that. And it's a hard job, and 3 months is a good time a good period for that type of work. And then in there, it's published twice in the newspaper of general circulation. In the original bill, it was once, and then it was amended back down the corridor to twice, and we agreed with them on that. On, let's see. Okay, still on page 4, lines 18 and 19 deletes district attorney and precinct officer. District attorney, because the wording now is elected or appointed county officers. A precinct officer, nobody has any idea what a precinct officer was in county government, and it's obvious that there's no such thing right now, but at one time, precinct officers collected money for some reason. That might be something for a historian to look up. So the officers are permitted to receive monies from various sources, and they pay to it right now to the county treasurers by the 25th of the month. They're asking that they pay to the treasurers by the 25th of the following month so that they can get a calendar month in. It's just common sense. Let's use a calendar month. And that's really the reality of what's going on. And then on page 5, lines 5 through 7, says the treasurer reports to county commission if the elected or appointed official do not deposit the funds. The current wording in there spanks their hands, but again, nobody knows what a precinct officer is. Then, finally, on page 6, lines 17 to 23, we cross out the language making county clerk the secretary to the County Planning and Zoning Commission. You can imagine how much they really enjoyed that. So the new language lets the commissioners designate just about anybody to be the secretary to the County Planning and Zoning Commission, including a member of the commission. And this is an effective immediate act because, again, they want statute to reflect what's really going on. So I stand ready for questions. If there are none, I call the question.
Thanks, Senator Johnson. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on page 4. Just curious if there was any conversation. You mentioned that this was brought back to publishing this report two times in the newspaper. Just wondering what kind of conversation took place about where we are in the electronic and information world. And, you know, I say that with some reservation because I'm a newspaper guy. But, you know, times they are a-changing. And I'm just wondering if this is a leftover statute from the days of the great printing lobby, or if there was any conversation. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Yes. This is a leftover statute, but the bill actually had the number of publication times dropped to once, and that was what hit the House floor. An amendment offered on the floor raised it back up to two. And the Clerks Association decided it wasn't worth fighting about, and that wasn't the fight to have. I do note that we're respecting the times that they are with the rest of the amendment on that line, because you'll look, no longer are we requiring that the paper be printed in the county. And that's because most papers aren't printed in the county. In fact, there are Wyoming papers of general circulation in a county that are actually published outside the state, more than you would realize. So it's really about where they're published. That's the part that reflects the new times. It was once originally, as it was introduced, and it on the house on the floor of the other body, it was raised back up to two, which is the original language.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to the question of why it's remained at two, I believe I can tell you. For many years, we had a wonderful man in this body by the name of Senator Peck, who's deceased, who was in the newspaper business. And through all those years, none of us ever dared change it.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, since we're talking about this publication, was there any talk about requiring it be on the Internet or on their website?
Senator Johnson.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No.
Thank you. Senator Dockstader is going to wade in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm no Senator Peck, but let me just say that if you truly want to get the word out, two times covers a well in your local newspaper, and you'll find the percentages in your communities and your local communities. That's how the word goes out to the community in the best possible form. Thank you.
The best, was that, you said the best possible way? Yes, sir. Form, okay. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 6 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 49. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 49, sponsored by Representative Madden, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was referred to Committee Number 3, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill Number 49, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption. And for an explanation of this wonderful bill, I yield to Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I get nervous when the Chairman of the Revenue refers to any exemption bill as wonderful. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it extends the sunset date for 1 year on manufactured equipment, and it's on the sales tax side of that. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill and a law that was enacted by the 2004 legislature, and it had a six-year period to revisit the issue. I will tell you that during the interim work, the Minerals Committee, and I believe probably the Revenue Committee as well, had an opportunity to look at the exemptions and see how it was working and the impact it was having on the manufacturing component of our industries in Wyoming. And, of course, what we're always trying to do is we're trying to diversify economically, and particularly in the manufacturing sector that really provides Wyoming with a broader base in our job sector. There was some concern about the use of this exemption for replacement equipment. That was never really the original intent of it, and I think we need to have a careful look at that. As I understand it, there will be this situation will be looked at during the interim. Rather than eliminate and let the sunset go in effect, the purpose of this bill is to extend it 1 year and 1 year only, look at the benefits, and particularly look at that situation where people may be using replacement cost equipment for the exemption rather than what it was intended, which is new. I think it's a good idea. I think we need to do all we can for manufacturing. I would ask for your favorable consideration and be glad to answer any questions.
Thanks, Senator Bebout. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and actually this is a good bill, and I commend the sponsors for bringing it to our attention. I have discussed with the co-chair of the interim committee. We will ask for an interim study of this so we can look at it very closely and see if it's doing what it was originally intended to do in terms of jobs creation and public benefit and all those kind of things, and how much is going for just straight replacement costs. This exemption roughly amounts to a $9.4 million subsidy.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would the sponsor of the bill or the person explain it go over the repealers on page 3 and how that fits into things?
Thank you, Senator Massey. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to. There are two sections of where these repealers are, and I got them marked in the statutes, and both are the same. And they're in the exemption section, and what they both do is, if you look at the language in our statutes, it says until December 31st, 2010, these exemptions shall be in place. Obviously, 2010 is behind us, and that's why those two repealers are in there.
Thanks, Senator Bebout. Are we ready for the question? Senator Case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually just getting up to go to the LS office, but, you know, this really is a terrible bill. There's no data. We've been telling them to collect data forever with this bill, and they say, gee, we need another year to collect data. They say that manufacturing has increased 4% in Wyoming, but it's decreased elsewhere in the nation. That must be because of this exemption. Well, the truth is there's been a lot of activity in places like refineries and Trona plants and mineral exploration that has been very good the past few years, and that explains the growth in the purchase of manufacturing equipment. Nothing to do with the fact that we give away money and leave it on the table.
Thanks, Senator Case. Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, we old guys keep track of time very carefully, and I believe the sponsor indicated that 2010 is now behind us. I don't think so. But the sunset clause takes effect the end of the year, and it would go away if we did not extend this at this time.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Larson. Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, it's always a pleasure to have my good friend from Teton County correct me, and you're right, 2010 is behind us. And actually, I was so excited to have 2009 in my rearview mirror that I got carried away on 2010.
Okay. Senator Schiffer wishes to advise and extend his remarks.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad I'm still up and talking in 2010. It's a relief to know that my colleague from Teton County is keeping track for us, that we're still here. Mr. Chairman, I think if you look at somebody asked about the repealer, those two provisions are in the statute. It says that this tax exemption begins after July 1st, 2004. We don't need that. It's already there. This is a cleanup to make our green books a little bit lighter, so when we bring them down to the session, us elderly folks can pack them in and out of our motel room.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee hold rights to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 49, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 49 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 86. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 86, sponsored by Representative Millen, Medicaid Elderly Care, an act relating to Medicare. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments. Mr. Chairman, to explain the House bill, what this does is authorize the Medicaid program to participate in a provision known as PACE. And what this does is relate to the K care for some of our really frail elderly citizens. And this is an unusual program that we're authorizing here in a number of ways. First, it is a joint program between Medicaid and Medicare, which is unusual. I don't think I've ever encountered that before. And second, it looks like it's going to save us money to get into this option. And we'll get to the fiscal note in a moment. What it does, Mr. Chairman, we had very good testimony in committee, particularly from a doctor from here in Cheyenne who is a geriatrician, and she told us quite a bit about the difficulty she has getting the proper care for elderly patients due to the restrictions that Medicare puts on their program and the silos and the restrictions that keep the program, the care there from being rational, that force people into circumstances where they get worse, come back into the hospital, have to stay 3 days, all that sort of thing, and it runs the cost up. Washington, I don't know how they do it, but they seem to have a genius for designing high-cost medical programs, and they've done it with Medicare. What this bill enables is an organization called Self-Pace Organization to receive a capitated rate from both Medicare and state Medicaid to provide all the care for some of these frail elderly people and avoid all the current restrictions that keep the care from being effective. And we had very extensive testimony in committee on what those were and how this would improve care. We would, I believe, be the 29th state to enact one of these things. It does require a fairly large sponsoring organization because you're going to take on some significant financial risk. And apparently, here in Cheyenne, the local hospital is willing to do that. And so we will get a test of this. So, and the legislation is necessary to authorize that. I won't go into all the details. I will say there are quite a number of quality protections here, starting with they're going to use an interdisciplinary team. There are various quality reports they have to make to both Medicaid and Medicare. And there's been a lot, the testimony was that there's been a lot of experience now in the past 10 years with this and other states, and they have had very good results. They both save cost and improve the quality of care. I would call your attention to the fiscal note on the original bill, which showed a general fund savings of $1.2 million. And we had the fiscal expert from the Department of Health there, and he testified that since there were no limits imposed on the program in this bill, he did it on all the, based on all the citizens that would be eligible, he thought, in the particular service area that we're likely to get a program. In fact, they anticipate that their enrollment would be about a tenth of those eligibles, and so the savings can be expected to be about a tenth of what's shown in the fiscal note, but that's still savings. There are some risks to it. You could bias the results by what kind of population you got in. They do tend to seek out some of the more frail of the elderly who will benefit the most from this coordinated care that escapes some of the bureaucratic restrictions. So it does tend to be a fairly severely ill population. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill. I think it is a very creative and very useful approach and hope the Senate will adopt it.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Ready for a question? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, and this might really work, but I do have a question about it. It might work in the context that I know that the in and out of a patient in hospitals under Medicare is a real issue. And I guess that's to save money. You have to go out of the hospital for a while, even if you're very ill, to save money. But I know, but it seems to me like it's kind of a cost-shifting thing. You put a capitated rate on a person's care, and then you say that the PACE organization is responsible for anything over that capitated care. And so what you're doing, if I'm right, is this right? Is that you're allowing, you're having, your cost savings is going to occur because of the combination of care and tracking and oversight that you have of these patients. So they don't use duplicated meds. They don't get themselves into trouble. They don't have to go in and out of a hospital, all of that kind of stuff. Now, is that the premise that you base the fact that they're going to save money upon, is that kind of care?
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think the senator is exactly right as to where some of the cost savings are coming. Now, you pay them at a rate that is 90% of the estimate of what the fee-for-service costs would be. That's specified in the bill. That's apparently one of our neighboring states does it that way, and another does it at 95%. We're saying 90%, and the proponents seem to think that that would work perfectly well. You do have, by reducing the need to send these people to a skilled nursing home, you're saving money for the state. By reducing the need for extra hospitalization so they can qualify for some of the Medicare services, you're saving money for the federal government. It's a cost savings both ways. And the testimony has been that the result has been a higher quality of care. And so, yeah, you're taking advantage of a capitated rate system, and you're taking advantage of the ability to get around all the crazy regulations that inhabit those two government programs. And that's where the cost savings comes in, and that's where the quality improvement comes in. It sounds almost too good to be true, but in fact it has been enormously successful elsewhere. And we had testimony, the doctor that testified had worked with one of these things in Colorado and was mightily impressed by what it did and the quality of care, and she sounded just totally frustrated with what you have to do in the current Medicare program in order to get people what they need, and the fact you often can't get them what they really need, and you can in one of these things.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, in additional response to our colleague from here in Laramie County, And I share a concern that when you have capitated care, the question is the quality of the care going to be as good as what's needed? And it turns out in looking at how they check the quality, these organizations have to meet or exceed minimum levels of performance of quality measures established by CMS, the federal program, and the state can add additional quality requirements. CMS asks the PACE provider to provide on a quarterly basis immunizations, grievances and appeals, enrollments and disenrollments, prospective enrollees, unscheduled hospitalizations, emergent or unscheduled care, and unusual incidents for participants and at the PACE site, and deaths. It also says that they've got to maintain a quality assessment and performance improvement program, which includes objective measures to demonstrate their performance in terms of the care provided. I think there is a quality assurance program in this. Understand this is, or can be, a for-profit organization, so you always worry once you've capitated it that they're given second-class service. I think if we monitor, particularly on a quarterly basis, we'll know if something bad's happening, I think.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion, when the committee hold rise for report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 86, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 86 has passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the committee of the whole rise and report.
Heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried.
Reading clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 22, do pass. House Bill 26, do pass amended. House Bill 32, do pass. House Bill 41, do pass. House Bill 46, do pass. House Bill 25, do pass amended. House Bill 66, do pass. House Bill 101, do pass. House Bill 24, do pass. House Bill 27, do pass. House Bill 56, do pass. House Bill 84, do pass. House Bill 109, do pass. House Bill 110, do pass. House Bill 124, do pass. House Joint Resolution 8, do pass amended. House Bill 10, failed to pass a committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 5 do pass. House Bill 6 do pass. House Bill 49 do pass. House Bill 86 do pass. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I move for adoption of the committee whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried and has been adopted. Messages from the House.
February the 14th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 190, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 17, Statement of Consideration. Ayes 20, noes 36, excused 4. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Here, guys.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 60 in gross, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 93, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Noes, Senator Bebout and Cooper. Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 111, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 57, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Job well done. I guess there's more than one way to clear a messy board. So, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 24th, 2010, I think.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 89 in gross residential construction preference, I would ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation.
Without objections, House Bill 89 will be re-referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I hate to correct our Majority Floor Leader, but tomorrow is the 25th, not the 24th. Your Travel Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow, 20 minutes after adjournment, where we will take up House Bill 77, Youth Archery Licenses, House Bill 47, Engrossed, NEPA and ESA Review, and we've added another bill, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 95, Engrossed, Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act 2.
Senator Cove.
President, your Committee Number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning. Now, members of the committee, listen up here at 7:30 in Room S11, next to the smoking lounge, to consider House Bill 120 and Gross Student Assessment Measures. And being a very diversified committee, House Bill 39, Insurance Benefits, Usual, Customary, and Reasonable. And House Bill 125, Engrossed, Subdivisions, Separately Acquired Properties.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, your Committee Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment. We're going to take up House HJR 10, Engrossed, Resolution Supremacy of Wyoming Water Rights. House Bill 122, Engrossed, Disposal of Livestock. House Bill 114, Engrossed, Participating Fences. And House Bill 54, Engrossed, Wyoming Food Freedom Act.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee Number 3 is going to meet tomorrow, February 25th, immediately on noon adjournment in Room S16, to take up the following bills. House Bill 29, Engrossed, Taxation of Specified Digital Products. House Bill 44, Engrossed, Taxation of Property Use for Economic Development. House Bill 70, Engrossed, Vacant Land. House Bill 67, Engrossed, Data Processing Center, Sales Use Tax Exemption, that's time permitting. House Bill 78, Engrossed, Natural Gas Taxation, time permitting. Mr. President, I kind of think that with the time left over, the entire committee is going to go out and stroll around the Capitol building and enjoy the fine weather.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would request that House Bill 111 be re-referred to appropriations. It does not have an appropriation, but it does have a fiscal note, and I would suggest it be re-referred to, move that it be referred to.
Without objection, House Bill 111 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, has a full slate of bills tomorrow at 7 a.m. I make that note to everybody. We're going to start an hour earlier. House Bill 15, Engrossed, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Revisions. House Bill 69, Secretary of State Directives Authority. House Joint Resolution 9, Engrossed, Resolution to Amend the United States Constitution. House Bill 23, Business Entities Reinstatement Fees. House Bill 34, Referendum on Adopted Ordinance Petitions. And House Bill 90, Insurance Service Contracts. Mr. President, there is a possibility that if we can't get these bills done by 9 o'clock, that we will continue our meeting upon final adjournment tomorrow. And I hope that's not real late.
Senator Nicholas.
President, your committee number two, Appropriations, is going to meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 88, Public Retirement Plans, Qualified Plan Status, House Bill 17 in Gross, Carbon Sequestration, Financial Assurance and Regulations. We'll meet up in room S16 for that. Tomorrow upon adjournment, Thursday afternoon, we'll hear House Bill 18 in Gross, Aquatic Invasive Species 2, House Bill 61 in Gross, Legal Services Funding, House Joint Resolution Number 4, Mandatory Judicial Retirement.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a few statements in regard to the time that we have left. I really appreciate the cooperation of the committees, particularly those that are meeting tomorrow morning. We took a little time off the noon hour before. This is an attempt to give those committees that meet upon adjournment a little bit of relief. We're going to make it. We're going to do fine. We'll do all we can do, and really that's all we can do. I think the item 8 on the Code of the West is talk less, say more. And I'll promise you, with the voice I got, I'll adhere to that. Again, now that I got my year straight, got my month straight, tomorrow's the 25th. I'll see you at 9 o'clock.
You've heard the motion that the Senate stand adjourned until 9 a.m. Thursday, February 25th. 2010. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried, and we are adjourned.